Jay Pizzy, Mosier on the beat. Look at my team, ay. Look at the ring, whoa. See what I mean, ay. You see what I mean? Look at my team, look at the ring, everything. This is a dream, all but a dream. This ain't a dream, I am a fiend for the cream, go. DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
See, I calculate. Yeah, y'all just palpitate. Whoa, if you don't calculate, get it? Get it? Calculate. Lady Justice is illustrious. I just love this. I can put this in this function and it turns up into something. And that something came from nothing. And I sold it for a button. Now I got this lovely lump sum. Guess I'll burn these bumps like buzzing, bro.
Welcome to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast, a show dedicated to Dynasty fantasy football trades and player values, with your hosts, John Paul Hurley and Izzy Elkafoss.
This ain't a dream, I am a fiend.
What's up, everybody? This is Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast, episode number 194. Izzy, I toned it down a little bit for you because I know you don't. You always back away from your monitor whenever I scream into my mic.
Yeah, you come in a little hot, but yeah, I think the listeners like the energy.
You think so? I bet they're super annoyed with me. I bet we lose more listeners per week than we gain because of me.
I think when they first turn on the app, like the podcast, they probably have it like dial like 8 or 9, and then because they know you're going to come in hot. And then once you do the intro, they probably turn it up to like 14, 15.
No, 11. This one goes to 11.
11.
And like I said, this one goes to episode 194. Joining me, my co-host, Izzy, the Pharaoh Fantasy Elkafoss. You got some new digs there, bro.
Yeah, we moved.
I'm not talking Stefan.
We moved. Yeah, we got new Stefan. We didn't get a new. Well, we're working on getting a new Stefan, but we've sold our old Stefan.
You're in a temporary Stefan right now.
We're in a temporary Stefan.
Yep. We're beating the hell out of this joke.
Yeah, but So in with the in-law.
Looks pretty good. You got a nice ceiling fan. Like for the people that are listening, my view of Izzy is usually the back of his bed. Like it's his headboard. He always lays down in his bed when he's recording his podcast. Mm-hmm. And now I get a lovely view of a ceiling fan. This is so much different than usual.
Yeah, I got a desk and the whole shebang. Yeah, I can't relax on the bed and do the pod anymore, which is my favorite thing to do.
So maybe you'll be less likely to fall asleep during the throughout the course of the podcast.
Yeah, we'll see if my energy levels are up.
Probably going to be really good, I'm going to guess. I'm going to guess better than usual. But anyway, we've got a few things to cover this week. We took a week off last week. We called it our bye week. Mm-hmm. And some of it was because Izzy was moving. Also, some was because we were just kind of in flux. We wanted a week off. We basically, let's just say that we were in Baltimore. We caught Ronies. We had to take a week off because of close contact.
I'm good with that.
Now the Ravens are back, so we're back. This week, we're going to talk about why it's going to be like the wide receiver podcast. We're going to talk about Corey Davis, Justin Jefferson, Henry Ruggs, Jalen Reagor, and then we're going to get some polls to cover. It should be kind of a quickie. So let's get right into it. Like I said, we're going to keep this nice and quick. So starting things off, I'm going to let you set this one up too. So like you had a series of polls on Twitter, and it was those ones I kind of get annoyed with where like somebody tweets out like some statistics and the age of a player, but don't divulge his name. And you got to try to guess like who you think is worth more or who you like better. And I want to hear these trades. So if you get a chance here, pull them up. And I want to give our listeners a chance to pick a side basically without knowing which player's name we're talking about. I kind of alluded to the fact that they'll know one of them, but some of the others they may not know. So go right ahead.
Yeah. So why don't you like them?
Because it leaves out a lot of information that you would need to evaluate a player. So like statistics and age are very singular things. And I need to know situation, contract in some cases. There are a lot of things I need to know in order to evaluate a player's value. So a lot of things.
Okay. So I did this exercise because I feel that one of the two players is highly overvalued and the other one is highly undervalued. And I kind of wanted to shed light on the situation and kind of just prove that one is overvalued and one is undervalued. And I feel like I did that based on the poll results. And it seemed like that's what everybody kind of agreed with as well. So essentially it was, I tweeted out, what would it take for you to acquire this wide receiver for? Or what would you acquire this wide receiver for? And then I put in the 16 game pace. So the first wide receiver was a 25-year-old with a 16 game pace of 75, 1106. And I gave the four options was mid first or more, late first, early second, mid second or less. I got 442 votes. This player, late first was the winner at 42%. So what would you acquire this wide receiver for? 42% said late first, 22% mid first or more. So essentially 64% of the population out of 442 votes said mid late first or better, essentially. This player before this week could have easily been acquired for a second round pick, mid second round pick. This player also happens to be an early first round draft pick in NFL draft circles, right? In 2017, he was also the 101 at one point in 2017. And he's seen a precipitous decline in his value only to have it rebound kind of towards the end of last year a little bit. He kind of flirted. And then this year. And it's taken a really long time for people to catch on to that he's having actually a pretty damn good season.
So you're telling me he's the 2020 Devontae Parker, basically, is what I'm hearing.
Essentially, yeah, essentially. And he just had 11 for 182 and one. Mr. Corey Davis. So,
do we have him on the call or something? I kind of feel like no, we're pausing.
I kind of set it up for like,
thank you for joining us on the show, Mr. Corey Davis.
So he's one of the most undervalued receivers prior to this week. I mean, during this poll, right? During, I pulled this before this week had happened. Easily the most undervalued receiver right now out of the 9 games, now 10 games that he's played, 8 out of the 10 games, he's at double digit fantasy points. So he's consistent. He's consistently producing double-digit fantasy points for you, and he's still 25 years old. He's going to be a pending free agent this year as well, so he could be seeing a nice contract, especially if he continues the pace that he's on. So I think the ship has sailed, though. I doubt you're going to be able to get him for a second round pick anymore, just based on this big blow up game. But you might be able to get him in the next couple weeks if he kind of slows down, but. He's kind of at a crossroads right now. He could stay in Tennessee and continue to be the 1B to AJ Brown's 1A, or he could become the 1A somewhere, yet to be determined, and get a nice contract. So I just wanted to shed light on that. And the other one.
Well, so before you move on to the next one, I want to ask a couple follow-up questions surrounding Corey Davis. So those statistics that you gave, the 75 for, was it 1106?
Yes.
Though, do you have any idea where that would have been, like, according to, like, last year's stats, would have been, like, the wide receiver 13 or 14 or something like that? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, good question. Let me pull this up for you here while we,
Because I think that would have been some valuable information. The second thing while you're pulling it up, like, I guess I got, like, a comment and then one more question for you, but my comment is, I do believe, so, like, you tweeted that out in the form of, like, what you would pay to acquire him. I wonder what the owners would accept to send him away. And I think you might be right. I think many Corey Davis owners would have moved him for like an early second. I think that's very, very likely. Yes. But now definitely not anymore.
So 1100 is 110 plus 75 is 185. And 6 times 6 is 36. 36 plus 185. So that's 220, right? 221. 221 fantasy points would have been the 20th overall fantasy wide receiver. So a mid to low end. Yes. Yes. A wide receiver too. And after this blow up game, his pace is going to be somewhere in the top 15 of fantasies. Maybe even closer to a wide receiver one, but high end wide receiver two.
Yeah. And yeah, and you're right. It's a contract year. Like, there's a lot of things that are looking good for him. If he stays in the offense, it seems like there's enough volume to support a couple of receivers. But it would be nice to see him move on to a better situation if that's possible.
Yeah.
My other question for you, actually, the rank was the other question there. So what do you think that most people would have sold him for? Do you think it would have been an early second at that time?
Yeah, absolutely.
And now, what do you think it's going to take for somebody to sell him?
I think he's definitely, for a selling perspective, I think he's definitely in the late first, mid first discussion. Probably like 109, 110 range.
What are you selling for?
I'd sell for like a mid. I'd sell for like 106 to 108.
Okay, that's fair. So yeah, he's definitely come up. That's awesome.
Yeah, you watch him. He looks like a legitimate receiver. He obviously has a pedigree. We expected him to be what he's doing now. So, yeah, I think looking at Corey Davis, it's hard to really say, like, he's not like a flash in the pan, right? We expected this out of him. So I don't necessarily know why the market isn't adjusting to him, why it's taking so long.
And you're right. He's always shown good efficiency when targeted. So now he's getting the targets and he's showing the production. So I think that's it's very promising for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So I think we covered most angles on Corey Davis. So we can move on to the next wide receiver here.
Yeah. Well, out of curiosity, I know you're not a big Corey Davis guy. How do you feel about him?
I wouldn't say that I'm not a big Corey Davis guy. I acquired him all over the place last year. I took him in startups. I took him in trades. So I have a lot of them. And the funny thing, I told you this on our text when he was blowing up. You sent me a text like saying that he's doing so great. And I didn't have him in my lineup outside of a best ball league, which is obviously in my lineup. But I had him in three other spots and I had him on the bench because I had better options. So it's kind of painful to... Yeah, like one of the leagues I have, it start two wide receivers, and I had Keenan Allen, Tyler Lockett, Stephon Diggs. So it'd be really hard to put him ahead of those guys after three targets, three receptions last week.
Yep.
And then, like, this was a top 10 pass defense, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So, like, he was shredding that secondary, so that's another thing that's very promising about him, too. So, but a lot of it could have been because the focus was on... AJ Brown.
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah, that's, I wouldn't say that I'm not a big fan of his. I like him.
Okay.
I'm not as big of a fan as like some people I've seen out there. I don't think you were ever a big fan either.
No, I absolutely hated Corey Davis at 101. Here's the thing. I like Corey Davis as a player. And I do this with, I'm probably the only person, I feel like I'm the only person that actually goes out and tries to be as fair with everybody as possible. Like, so I look at Corey Davis and say, I like Corey Davis. I think he's going to be a good player. But then when, just because I like a player doesn't mean I support him at a certain position, right? So like the 101 for Corey Davis was a hell no for me. I felt he was more like 105 in 2017. Like I would have taken Corey Davis around 105, 106 in 2017. He was going 101. And a lot of that was due to our friend Nick Whalen, who's got a lot of he has a lot of influence on the community, which is great. And it's nice seeing analysts that have that type of influence. But I feel like the influence that Nick had propelled Corey Davis into the 101, and then he went sixth overall or fifth overall. I think he went sixth overall, which kind of cemented him ahead of Leonard Fournette, who ended up going 105 overall, like so fifth overall to the Jags. So he still went 101 over Leonard Fournette. And I was the only one banging the table saying 101's way too early. And it made it feel like I didn't like Corey Davis when I actually did.
And it's all about not liking his position, not player. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So I ended up scooping after he had his down rookie season and his second season, I ended up scooping up a lot of Corey Davis. So I probably have 6 or 7 Corey Davis shares out of my 15 leagues. So. That's a significant amount for me. I mean, for a guy that had zero going into the end, I've been able to acquire 6 or 7. It might even be more.
And that's pretty impressive because he, for the most part, for the last couple of years, he's been a little bit of a roster clogger because you couldn't trust him enough to put him in your starting lineup from week to week. So he's kind of been sitting there just marinating.
Yeah. I mean, I picked him up for, you know, late second round value.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well, late second round value, if it ends up flopping, it flops. And if it takes off, kind of like what it's doing now, then I'll get a return, you know, a nice little return premium. And our friend Nick Whalen, we're in a league together. He's been trying to get Corey Davis for a late second for like the last 4 weeks. And I'm like, I have him at late second. Like before the season, he was late second value. He's gone up in value, whether like some people in the community disagree or not. He's had a good season, so he's exceeded expectations this season. So why is he still a late second round pick?
Yep, I agree with that.
So it's like, we have to adjust him. And so I'm just going to say, hey, if you meet me at my price tag, I'll sell him to you. Otherwise, he's not going anywhere. And my price tag right now is 106 to 108.
Yep, I had the exact same situation for the entire year on Antonio Gibson, as you're aware. So
Yeah, absolutely. Player two in that poll.
Player two.
16 game pace, also a 25-year-old. Thing with Corey Davis, this is his fourth season. This individual has only played two seasons. So last year was his rookie season. This is his second season. 16 game pace, 100 on the nuts, 1,400 on the nuts, and four touchdowns. Early first or more was 30%. Mid first was 36%. Late first, 21%. Early second or less, 13%. So 66% of owners would pay a mid first or more. 30% said they'd pay early first or more for that wide receiver. That is Mr. Terry McLaurin. Now, looking at where Terry McLaurin is, he's probably going, what, top 15 overall in startups right now?
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Superflex?
Yeah. Maybe not Superflex. I can tell you where...
In one quarterback leagues, yes, top 15. But in Superflex, I'd say more like 20, 25. Yeah.
He's 23rd. 23rd
in Superflex. We usually talk Superflex. I just want to clarify.
So let's keep it in Superflex. He's top two rounds. So Corey Davis would be going probably before this week. He'd probably be going somewhere in the round nine range.
Yep.
Right? Let's see where the calculator has him ranked, which is basically based off of the universal market value of Mr. Corey Davis.
I got it. It's 95th.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that would be eighth round. Late eighth round pick.
Okay.
And Terry McLaurin's end of second round. So there's a 6-round difference between their ADPs right now. And my whole thing is, I don't think they're necessarily close, but they're a lot closer than the community has them. And I was trying to shed light on that. So Terry McLaurin, I think majority of people just assume he's younger because he's only been playing for 2 years.
I think so too.
But he was an old rookie, which is the issue with old rookies. Is his rookie season, he was 24 years old. Is it now he's a 25-year-old, and Corey Davis has been trying to do this for 4 years, and they're the same age. So when people think McLaurin, they think higher upside because, oh, he's only been playing for 2 years.
Yep.
But they have the same amount of time left in their careers, essentially. So
yep.
What's the difference to me, really, between two 25-year-olds? So for me, I think Corey Davis should probably be somewhere in the, you know, around 5 or 6 range in startups. And yeah, probably 5. I think he's cemented himself as a top 50, 60 startup player. And then I think McLaurin should be somewhere in the mid to late third. I just think that they're a little bit higher than they should be.
Yeah.
And I wanted to illustrate that.
Hard to argue that. And I think I like McLaurin slightly more than you. And I think some of the reasons I like him is because he's shown that he can be quarterback proof. So he's kind of transcendent. Like, he's been having a wide array of quarterbacks throwing him the ball, but he's still been producing at a relatively good rip. And even with your statistics, the fact that he's bringing in 100, you know, he's on pace for 100 balls just kind of shows that he's got a pretty big target share and lots of opportunity, you know. So I really like that. It's promising.
Well, you think about this, though, and this is the thing with both of these players. With Corey Davis, his situation could get better.
Could, yep.
Right? He could become the 1A somewhere. If you look at McLaurin, could they get a quarterback somewhere? Sure. Probably not going to happen anytime soon. So his situation could get better there. If you look at McLaurin, Steven Sims is the wide receiver 2. Cam Sims is the wide receiver 3. Logan Thomas is the tight end 1. So where's the target competition? And that's eventually going to come. So we have to adjust that as well. So I think that kind of offsets the quarterback issue.
Maybe Corey Davis will go to Washington next year.
Right?
Actually,
that would be hilarious.
My gut tells me that the Jets have their eyeballs on him, to be honest.
Why?
I just think they're going to want to give Trevor Lawrence some more weapons. And I think Corey Davis will be one of the higher touted free agent wide receivers. So it just kind of makes sense.
Okay.
We did want to transition into rookie wide receivers. So this is kind of like the second portion of this wide receiver talk. Specifically, we wanted to talk about Justin Jefferson, what his current value is looking like. And then we wanted to talk about Henry Ruggs, Jalen Reagor. So let's start with Justin Jefferson. I'm going to key this up for you. So I made a tweet out today. So this guy is it's the fifth time a rookie wide receiver has gone over 1,000 yards receiving in his first, I think it was 10 games. I'm going off memory. And it's the first time since 2014 when Odell Beckham Jr. did it. And I did some really quick research and found out that Odell Beckham Jr. back in 2014, in the month of December, his ADP was like 15. And then month of January, it spiked up to like two or three, January 2015. So at what point, this is kind of my question for everybody, at what point do you start treating Justin Jefferson like basically a top 10 dynasty asset? Like he's doing it right now. The hype is going to catch up with him at some point in the next month or so. Should we flip the script right now and start to try to purchase him as a top 5 or 10 dynasty asset right now? Like right now, he's currently ranked as like the 12th in value, the 12th overall. And I think that was also in one quarterback. I can take a look here. I want to see if that's Superflex. Let's see. So in Superflex rankings, he's 20th overall ranked player for value. Flipping the script, do you think we need to basically warp him to the top 10 right now and start acquiring him for guys that are in the top 10? Because he's going to probably ascend beyond that really soon.
All right, let's go down the list.
Let's go down the list. So I think we're going to skip over, like in Superflex, Patrick Mahomes, Kyler Murray, Deshaun Watson.
Let's skip over. Let's stick with wide receivers.
You want to go only wide receivers? Okay.
Yes.
I'm going to
sort by. Yeah,
and by the way, I got to put a quick plug in here. DynastyTradeCalculator.com. One of my favorite parts about our website is that we have dynamic rankings. You can basically customize your league settings. And there's over I think 250 different combinations of league settings and scoring settings. To get really fine tuned on what your rankings are. So I'm going to be using just pretty much standard cookie cutter 12 team PPR Superflex and then just the wide receivers. So number one, DK Metcalf. No, right?
No, yeah, no.
AJ Brown, no.
No.
Tyreek Hill, probably not, but I'm getting to the point where I would consider it there.
Let's stop for a second.
Okay.
Why not?
Why not AJ Brown?
Give me a good reason why Justin Jefferson. I have a good reason, but give me your good reason why Justin Jefferson can't be the overall wide receiver one
ahead of DK. So I think that's the main question right there, ahead of DK Metcalf.
Well, ahead of whether it's DK, whether it's Tyreek, whether it's AJ Brown, whether you want a little bit older one in Devontae Adams.
I can't give you a good reason why he wouldn't be the wide receiver one. And by the way, I should want to like put as a disclaimer. DK Metcalf in the calculator is valued at 46.2 and skip down to the sixth overall, which is where Justin Jefferson is. He's valued at 39.4. So there's only...
Wait, oh, Justin Jefferson, sixth overall wide receivers?
Sixth overall wide receivers, yeah. And only 5.8 points behind DK Metcalf. So
yeah, I think that's right.
And this is before this week's adjustments will go through.
Okay, so let's continue the exercise.
Okay. So DK, to answer, so like I think DK Metcalf, AJ Brown are definitely a no right now in today's environment. And then like I start to flirt with the idea of I would probably slide him in ahead of Tyreek Hill pretty comfortably. Tyreek Hill is an elite production guy. But now we're kind of getting to the end of the season where production isn't as important as it will be. Because like we got one more week. This is the last week of the regular season. So Tyreek Hill to a contender is super important. But he's got 3 weeks of the season left. He's 26 years old. He'll be going on his 27-year-old season. I think I'd pretty easily and confidently slide him ahead of Justin Jefferson based on team situation. But in a vacuum, Jefferson ahead of Tyreek for me.
Okay.
And I'm projecting.
Okay.
And Devontae Adams, identical. Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill are identical.
To you?
Yeah, they're situations important, like situation dependent.
Okay. So do you have Justin Jefferson over both of them?
Yes. My projected value of Justin Jefferson next month will probably already be worth more than these guys, especially once the playoffs are over.
Okay, Hurley, you're in a startup. Okay. Metcalf and AJ Brown are gone because those are your top two. Who's your third wide receiver?
Justin Jefferson.
So he is wide receiver three.
Yep, because I take him ahead of Tyreek Hill, 26 going on 27, Devontae, 27 going on 28. And DeAndre Hopkins, 28 going on 29. That's pretty easy for me.
Anybody else in there that you're super high on?
I'll go down the line. Godwin, no. CeeDee Lamb would probably have been a maybe had Dak Prescott stayed healthy. In fact, I think he'd be not only in this conversation, but maybe leading it. But we just have to wait on him now. Terry McLaurin, we already went through that exercise. It's a no. And then Michael Thomas, everything else behind is so much easier, but I think it's pretty easy for me. So what about you? Same questions all around for you. You said you had a reason why DK Metcalf and or AJ Brown should be ahead of him.
How many games has Justin Jefferson had under double-digit fantasy points this season?
None, I think, right?
He's played 12 games. How many games has he had under double-digit fantasy points? You said zero?
I'm guessing zero, yeah.
You guessed wrong.
Okay, what is it, two?
5 out of 12 games he's had under double-digit fantasy points. That's probably the only reason why he's not the wide receiver one. And at the end of the day, I get it. Fantasy points are fantasy points. But when you're trying to win a championship and you want players on your team that will show... Okay, so when you have a seven... If we had a 7-game series for a championship, I want Justin Jefferson. If we have one game to decide your fate, you don't want Justin Jefferson because 43% of the time, he's scoring single digits.
But 43% of the time, he's scoring 20 or more.
So 57% of the time, he's scoring... Or what do you say? So
he's got five games of 20 or more, yeah.
Yes. So 43% of the time, he's got... Yeah, exactly. But you can look at a guy like Tyreek Hill, who's done the same thing. You look at DK Metcalf. He's also done the same thing. I think he might only have 4. You look at Davante Adams. He's had multiple games over. I mean, Davante Adams is outlier. The guy's averaging 26 fantasy points a game. He's a wide receiver one, and Tyreek Hill is just behind him, but he's 40 points essentially ahead of DK Metcalf, and he's missed 2 games.
Yep.
So he's an out. This season's an outlier. He's having one of the most dominant fantasy seasons ever. So let's take him out for a second. But if I'm looking at, let's look at AJ Brown for a second. He's also missed 2 games. He's had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games out of 10 over 20. So he's at 50%. He's only had 1, 2 games in single digits. So it's just like, I want in a 1-game decide playoff situation, I want consistent production from my number one wide receiver. Now, the thing is with Justin Jefferson is with those 30-point bombs that he's dropped 2 of them. Those are like huge advantages. Like 20 points is a solid week. That's a really good week. That's basically, 60 for 80 and a touch. It's a good week. But the difference between 20 to 30 is the same thing between 10 and 20. And we look at a 10-point producer versus a 20-point producer as a big deal. So yeah, I mean, Justin Jefferson putting up 2 30 bombs, almost 1 40 bomb is pretty cool, right? It's nice to have.
Yeah.
But I don't want some wild deviation of fantasy points.
I think you're being a little hard on him because he's a rookie. He is a rookie.
I get that. But
like, do you expect this type of erratic behavior like in his like second year, third year? Like, I think he's going to become more consistent.
Yeah, sure. He might. But we already know that Metcalf and AJ Brown are still young receivers and they're being consistent.
Yeah, but if we want to be fair, we should compare him to DK Metcalf's rookie season.
Not necessarily, because players develop it. So Justin Jefferson might have been NFL ready and he might already be close to a ceiling. We don't know. You look at OBJ, his best season was his rookie season. He never really got better. He blew up and never got better.
And that's arbitrary to me.
Tell me more.
Justin Jefferson, I believe, will at some point in the next month ascend to being where OBJ was in the changeover of 2014-2015. I'm trying to get ahead of that curve because by the time everybody catches up, Jefferson will be valued as the wide receiver one, wide receiver two. And if I can acquire him as like the current, what I say he was, the wide receiver six and like the 20-something-ish overall super flex dynasty asset. If I can acquire him as like a top 10, 15 player, and then he ascends to like a top 5, then I've automatically, and I can decide whether or not I want to mitigate my risk or cut my, you know, color in basically and take my gains and trade them off, which I like to do that sometimes. I just want to be ahead of the curve because I think it's happening, regardless of what happens with the rest of the season. So where would you put them then? So like you gave me the reason why you wouldn't slot them ahead of DK, AJ in a startup.
Okay. So for me personally,
yeah,
I think I'd have him at wide receiver one.
Yeah.
Now, I think the right answer though, you know, like I said, I was playing devil's advocate on why I don't like the variation and why we can't assume that he's going to be more consistent or get better. We can't assume that.
Well, rookies usually, we can't assume it, but it's odds are good. Yeah.
Odds are solid that he'll probably be a little bit more consistent.
Yeah. And that's all we can play as odds.
Sure. The reason why I'd rather have Justin Jefferson, let's say, as the wide receiver one, is A.J. Brown is in a run-first offense, and Derrick Henry's not going anywhere, and I just don't see the situation where A.J. Brown is in an offense where they're throwing the ball.
I agree, because they're winning.
Enough for him to... Yeah, yeah, I mean, he hasn't had a double-digit target game. Now, mind you, 0 out of his 10 double-digit target games. Deontay Johnson, to put in perspective, every single game he stayed healthy, he's had double-digit target games. So that just explains to you how, I mean, A.J. Brown really isn't getting enough targets to justify him being the wide receiver one or wide receiver two.
Kind of like DK, yeah.
He's being very consistent with him, similar to DK. Efficient, which is great. But through 10 games, he's averaging 4.4 receptions.
AJ Brown?
Yeah.
Yeah.
4.4 receptions. Now, he's got 725 yards and 8 touchdowns. Right? So he's averaging close to 100 yards a game.
And he looks really good.
Dude, he's a stud.
Yeah, he's an animal. He's a train.
Yeah. I want A.J. Brown in an offense that's going to throw enough to where he's getting Deontay Johnson targets.
That's true, and they're so game script dependent, yep.
Yeah, so it's like, that's the devil's advocate for A.J. Brown. And the same thing could be said for D.K. Metcalf.
Yep, identical.
You look at D.K. Metcalf, he's played 13 games. He only has 63 receptions, 98 targets. He's had 3 games of double-digit targets, but he's also had a bunch of games under 8.
Yeah. So bonus question, are at wide receiver 1/2, are DK Metcalf and AJ Brown screaming sales right now for you?
Got it. For what, though? Like, there's really...
Justin Jefferson and change?
Oh, dude, that's what I was going to say. The right answer is if you own an AJ Brown or DK Metcalf, the right answer is trying to get Justin Jefferson plus.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, you're not going to be, let's say Justin Jefferson is always 10% less in production than DK and AJ Brown. Okay. For the rest of his career, let's say 10, 15%. You still got a plus there that should provide extra equity to your rosters, mm-hmm. whether it's via draft pick, whether it's a player. So it's not like you're trading them straight up. You're getting the ample value in return to justify it.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I don't know. So let's compare Justin Jefferson. In his rookie season, he's had 4 games of double-digit targets, and he's had a 2 9 reception games, an 8 reception game, 2 7 reception games, which is, I believe, when you look at DK Metcalf, because AJ Brown hasn't had those numbers, DK Metcalf has had 2 games over 10 receptions every other game, but he's had 10 games, 5 or less.
Yep.
So that's the other side of the coin.
Yep.
But I look at this and say, the only case I can see you making for a guy like DK Metcalf is he could also continue to develop, because right now his game is all, I don't want to say all.
It's mostly stretching the field, yeah.
Mostly stretching the field or crossing patterns, right? He's not a guy he's not your go-to get me a first down guy. That seems to be Tyler Lockett.
Yeah.
But he is the go get me points guy.
Yeah.
He's your big play guy.
He's your chunk play guy, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like he could develop into that. I have my doubts based on, I don't know if he's got the footwork and the ability to be a guy that's going to be like DeAndre Hopkins, Davante Adams, where you got the size, you know, body, box people out, all of that, and be able to eat up 8 to 10 yards per play, so on and so forth. Like, I just don't know if he develops into that guy that's going to get you 160 targets.
Yeah, I don't think he'll ever have the hands of DeAndre Hopkins, but yeah, he...
Well, yeah, that's a different conversation. Nobody will.
He has his own strengths in his game, and I mean, they're absolutely very attractive, but you're right. He'll never compare to some of those guys because he just lacks some of those refined skills, you know, footwork and hands.
Yeah.
But yes, like strength and speed, and like this guy is off the charts, obviously. So,
otherworldly.
Yeah.
But I think when you say, like, look at Calvin Johnson, and he's not Calvin Johnson. Like, Calvin Johnson was far more polished overall as a receiver than DK Metcalf was. But DK Metcalf could eventually get there. Who knows? But if you can, you know, we kind of glossed over Tyreek Hill, and I think you and I both, I think you less than, I think you're coming around to this over time, but roster flexibility is a thing that I think most dynasty owners are coming around to. And you mentioned Tyreek Hill being 26 years old. He's going to be 27 in March. So he's going to be a 27-year-old receiver. And we know that 27 isn't necessarily when you hit the inflexibility point, but 28 is where you start getting less for that player. And Tyreek Hill is phenomenal. But if I can get Tyreek Hill production at 5 years younger, why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't understand how you can have Tyreek Hill as the wide receiver one or Davante Adams as the wide receiver.
Well, I think a lot of it is a smaller win window, you know, that people have. Like, they put their dynasty teams on a 2 to 3 window, and then they just react later on once they get a little bit older, which is really hard to do. But Tyreek Hill has many, many years of this elite production. He doesn't have any question marks. And with a guy like Justin Jefferson, you just have to bake in risk, you know? Like, it's, you have to bake it in. So that's the reason.
Tyreek Hill has his off-the-field risk.
He does, but I think he's long enough removed from that where people are comfortable having him there.
Sure. Sure. But the 57-point game, that's an outlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we can essentially take that out. Before week 9, Tyreek Hill had 0 100-yard games. He sniffed it twice. He's just been really heavy on the touchdowns, and he had a 57-point outburst.
Yeah.
But when you look at Tyreek Hill versus DK Metcalf versus AJ Brown versus Justin Jefferson in a points per game perspective, he's not blowing them out of the water.
Yep.
So it's like, for me, I'll take the reset. You give me five extra years, and I'll give you the 2 points per game difference, and I'm totally fine with that. You can have that. And listen, Tyreek Hill is great, but why not? Why not give yourself roster flexibility?
Yep.
Because at some point in time in the next 2 years, Tyreek Hill is going to be productive, but he's not going to be like DeAndre Hopkins is a perfect example. Still a top 5 wide receiver, but his market in a league is shallow. Look at the league that we're in together. He's hard to trade,
mm-hmm.
despite his production. And Tyreek Hill is going to be there. You don't want to be handcuffed. It's okay to have one Tyreek Hill. You just can't have 3 or 4 or 5 of them where you have 5 anchors on your team where they're producing. But if you want to hit the retool button or reset button, you can't.
Right.
So that's just a big, big feature for me. But yeah, anyways.
I agree.
So I think we kind of agree, like, Justin Jefferson is our personal wide receiver ones.
Yeah. And I think we're both kind of projecting him to be there.
And I wouldn't be taking him first overall. I would be trying to get Jefferson plus.
Yeah. You wouldn't need to take him first overall. That's the answer.
Yeah.
Not yet.
He's a stud, though.
Not yet. Yep. But again, I think the world's going to catch up really quick, just like they did with OBJ. So,
yeah.
So we can quickly touch base on Ruggs and Rager. The bulk of the conversation for the wide receivers this week was surrounding Corey Davis, Terry McLaurin, and then Justin Jefferson. But nice to see Ruggs get his touchdown, even though, again, with the Adam Schefter tweet that I covered a minute ago on the podcast, I think it was a little bit of a gimme, but he put himself in a situation and he blasted his, you know, 4.27 speed. And like,
it's just filthy.
It's nice that he can actually, you know, show that he's capable of doing that. So they feel a little bit better as a Ruggs owner, finally.
dude, it's a nice play. You shouldn't take anything away from it. Hit him with a double move. And here's the thing. You have Ruggs with no safety over the top.
Yep.
That's going to be a touchdown every time.
Yeah, I'd like to see that more frequently.
Well, no, but no team is dumb enough to leave nobody.
Yeah, that's
just
true.
Have no safety over the top.
Yep.
So they did a engage eight like you do in Madden, right? This is an engage eight. And they set the house. And you got nobody behind, and no cornerback is staying with Ruggs.
I honestly, though, I do think that if there was like a safety back there, I think he could probably get the amount of separation that he got on his little double move, a little stutter step from that D back. I think he would have had enough space to be able to juke out a safety pretty easily, as long as there's enough space, and the safety didn't read that the ball was coming there that quickly. But
so this could be something where. And this was a concern of mine coming out, where Ruggs might be a better NFL wide receiver than he is fantasy in terms of...
Because he opens up the field, yeah.
He's even when he's not producing, he's still a threat.
Yep.
Like, teams know they can't just let him run deep with no safety over the top. So he's opened up the offense a lot more than people actually realize.
Yeah.
So if it really comes down to, does he develop more than that? But right now, he's just a really good asset. He just, in the NFL, he's just not a really good asset in fantasy purposes.
Nope.
But we see glimpses of him being able to, he's not just running deep. He's doing double moves. He's had a few gaps in terms of drops, which was a concern as well. But you see glimpses of this guy has the it factor in terms of he could be a game breaker where he's a fantasy asset just as much as an NFL asset.
Yep.
So I think that's important. It's kind of like, you know, with Rager in this conversation, Rager scored a punt return touchdown, but he hasn't done it as a receiver. And this is the big thing that we talked about, that I talked about quite a bit, is most of people's Jalen Rager highlight clips that they were posting on Twitter saying that he was a top three wide receiver in this class and so on and so forth were special teams plays.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't get fantasy points for those.
Mm-hmm.
They don't translate. Just because you can return a punt doesn't mean that you can play a receiver position. So we'll kind of wait and see. Obviously, Rager's a game breaker, but we don't know if he can actually put that together as a wide receiver.
I don't think he can in that offense. I think he can as a wide receiver, but not in that offense.
Why is that?
I tweeted this out and we briefly talked about it on a podcast, so I'll just quickly cover it again. But before Rager came back from his injury, he was receiving some like ridiculous hype, and people were trading mid first to acquire him before he came back again. And I think it's because he showed glimpses, kind of like what Ruggs did this week. He showed glimpses of his deep threat capabilities before he got injured. And then coming back, people thought that he would put it together and have some. But Carson Wentz, Doug Peterson offense, and now maybe even Jalen Hurts offense, I don't think they're capable of producing a very high, you know, high scoring wide receiver situation. They target tight ends too much, and they just don't utilize their wide receivers. And maybe I could be wrong, kind of like you were with the Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs situation going into this season, where they completely changed the way that they run their offense, which is a kind of a like unprecedented, unheard of. I don't see that happening with Doug and Carson and Jalen. I just think they're going to continue to grind out tight ends and use their wide receivers when they can. I think Rager will have some flashes of big games like Philadelphia Eagles wide receivers have done in the past. I don't think he'll put it together very consistently. So he was a big sell for me before he came back from his injury.
Yeah. Speaking of being wrong, we had a bet that that Damian Harris, I bet you that Damian Harris would have 15 carries a game on average with Sony himself sidelined.
Yep.
And he finished at 13.2 carries per game. So you win the bet.
I win, but it's enough for me to say that I'm a little bit surprised that it came that close. I didn't think it would even come close to that. I was comfortable with 15, but I didn't think he'd get anywhere close.
Well, the very next game he had six. Like yep. that put him so far behind the eight ball. It's like, okay, well, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, when we made the bet, I was like, "Izzy's crazy," but no, I don't think you're crazy. So
Okay, perfect. Yeah. That's a win. But you still get $5.
So I think I won, since we're revisiting bets. So I won the Harris bet. I won the Diggs bet because he already hit his his target.
Diggs was done.
So I think his target threshold was 96, and he's already done that. But now it's official. Yes. I'm saying.
Yep.
And then I think I'm going to win the Chase Claypool bet.
I don't know. You might. It's looking good. It's looking better than I thought.
Yeah, he's getting like insane amount of touchdowns and targets, and I think it's going to be pretty easy, honestly. And by the way, to revisit the bet really quickly, I think Claypool will be worth the 110 or more by the time the 2021 draft happens, and I think that's going to be pretty easy. So,
yeah, you're probably right.
So I'm trending pretty good on that one, and I think you're going to force me to lose the Dak one, even though he got injured, which is ridiculous.
No, it's fine.
Okay. but we gotta do more bets. Like we probably have to make some before like fantasy playoffs come in or something. So we've got to find things we disagree on.
Okay, fair. We can do that. I did one poll because the other ones aren't eligible to be polled yet because Clyde hasn't, or he's playing now, Sunday Night Football, and the Steelers haven't played yet.
There you go. So if you haven't heard our podcast in the last few weeks, we like to run polls at the end of it. So since the beginning of the season, we've been running polls, and it's usually surrounded with rookies. The only one that's not a rookie poll is this Pittsburgh Steelers wide receivers. But we like to recap these polls week to week just to kind of track the changes in values. It's kind of a little bit of a social study for us. So Izzy's going to do the poll recap this week. And it's only one because we're a little premature recording this podcast. But take it away.
Yeah, which is kind of been it's going to be the norm moving forward with our schedule, unfortunately. But
yeah, why did you go in and get a job? Unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. I had to. I had to pay the bills. So we don't have many votes, unfortunately, because I tweeted out about not too long after we started recording this podcast. But it's the Burrow Herbert Tua vote poll, excuse me. Last week, if you recall, 2 weeks ago, Herbert won 77. This is after Burrow's injury. Before Burrow's injury, they were dead even. And Tua had 15% versus the Burrow at 43, Herbert at 42. The following week after Herbert's ACL and Tua got benched, Herbert was at 77%, Burrow at 18%, Tua at 5%. Then, after this last week, Herbert was at 72%, Burrow at 25%, Tua at 3%.
Oof.
Now, we have 85 votes only. 94 votes. What do you think the poll is at?
Tua, 301 about. No interceptions. I think he's going to spike back up into the double digits. And Justin Herbert had a little bit of a stinker. I think it might have been his worst game of the season, if I'm...
Oh, by far.
If I remember correctly. I couldn't remember if his first game was bad or not, because he was kind of thrust into the starting lineup when Tyrod Taylor's lung was pierced. So like hours before the game, he was thrust in. I don't remember how well he did, but anyway. I'll say Tua like 12%, and I'll say Herbert dropped back down into the 50s, and that would make Burrow into the like 30/40 range.
Okay.
So 50-40-10, just to make it easy.
50-40-10.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I retweeted it now while we were talking. I was able to get 40 votes in the last 2 minutes.
Lovely.
So Herbert is at 58%.
Okay.
Burrow is at 30%, and Tua is at 12%.
Okay, so I was kind of close. On the right track. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I was less lazy with my math, I probably would have gone a little bit closer to those. So.
Yeah. But yeah, interesting. And Herbert looked shaky today.
He did, and it wasn't because he was going against an extremely stiff defense or anything. It was just a shaky performance, is all.
Mm-hmm.
It was. Do you attribute his shaky performance to Bill Belichick's ability to game plan around rookie quarterbacks? Because that was what they were drumming up during the game commentation.
I don't know if he's good enough to do it against a rookie. Why isn't he good enough to do it against? Although, I guess maybe
he just knows how to pressure rookies. Yeah.
You can throw different stuff at rookies. Maybe. Yeah. There might be some truth to that.
And you, I mean, this is kind of like a little bit on a, like a sidestep here, but I did notice that Kyler Murray is being game planned pretty hard against too right now. So like, I noticed towards the beginning of the season, whenever Kyler Murray was under pressure, which was kind of frequent, but whenever teams would send the defensive ends on a blitz, like basically like a, I can't think of the name of the play, but defensive ends basically quarterback contain. So in a QB contain type environment, defensive ends kind of go wide on him. Kyler Murray at the beginning of the season would have a tendency to kind of like spin around, put his back to the rusher, the pass rusher, and roll out to the outside. And I noticed in today's games, every single time when Kyler Murray tried that move, that little like backward spin move, the defensive ends would automatically start to run that direction to pin him off, knowing exactly where he was going to be. So I think Kyler Murray's moves are kind of well documented now. And I'm wondering if it could impact his production going forward, you know? Because a lot of like in the beginning of the season, he'd make that spin, he'd get loose and he could find somebody down the field, or he'd take off and get like 5, 10, 12 yards every time he rushed. He's not doing that now. He's getting sacked.
No, he is struggling. And to give you a perspective, so Herbert's worst game of the season before this week was 14.7 points in week three. And that was his first game. He had 4.4 points.
Wow. And week three was his first game, I believe, right? Because didn't Tyrod play
second
two?
Game.
Okay.
Second game. Yep. You look at Kyler. Last week against the Patriots, also against the Patriots. So maybe the Patriots have stiffened up.
They're good.
Because they shut down Kyler. He had 170 and a pick.
And they've always said that about Bill Belichick's defense. You know, his scheming. He always schemes against their best player. And you know, arguably Kyler and Herbert would be the guys you'd want to focus on.
Yeah, but you can make the case. Well, you can make the case that every quarterback or every team you'd have to kind of
no. I mean
game plan. Okay.
I mean look at Tennessee. You know, that's a good example.
Yeah, I guess. So yeah,
that might be the
games.
Only example.
Yeah, the last two games. I mean, Watson in week 10 lit him up for, or week 11 lit him up for 344 and two and a touchdown on the ground.
Yep.
So it's just been the Kyler and Herbert back to back weeks. They've combined for 13.3 points against a Bill Belichick led defense.
Yeah. The only thing I do like about Kyler Murray is that we both consider him having. Having had a struggling game, right? We think he struggled today. He still had three passing touchdowns. That's promising for me. You know, he's just not taking off as much. It's weird.
Yeah,
he only had five rush attempts for 15 yards. That's like super unheard of. And I just think it's that contain that they were running against him was super effective.
Yeah, so, I mean he had that stretch there, where he's basically scoring a touchdown on the ground every game.
Yeah. God, I just think he looks like sometimes he looks uncomfortable staying in the pocket or stepping up in the pocket. He wants to roll outside every time and people are onto it now. So it might have been just today. So,
yeah. But what do you think of Jarrett Stidham basically in 1 minute of real time and like 30 seconds of game time basically put up the same amount of passing yards as Cam Newton did the whole game?
I'm still baffled why the Cam thing is forced. Like, I don't know why Bill hasn't, you know, rotated or pivoted just to try Stidham, just to see what he's got. Because Cam isn't doing it, you know? Like, he's doing it on the ground. He's got, what's he got, 10 touchdowns? That's unbelievable.
11. He's got 11.
But go ahead and Taysom Hill him then, you know?
Yeah, he's got 11 touchdowns. Do you know how many passing touchdowns he has?
I would guess, like, three?
Yeah,
well, I know it's one to wide receivers.
He's got five.
Oh my god!
All season.
That would be hard to do that. As a professional quarterback, that would be hard to only have five if you played every game.
Yeah, and what's even crazier is he's got 2,000 passing yards in 11 games. He's got 2,000 passing yards in 11 games, so a little under 200 a game. But he's had two games over 365.
I mean, don't you think they could be a better team with Stidham? Like, they could be. I don't know the answer, but...
I mean, I don't know. Stidham might not be very good. I mean, yeah. I feel like if they were better with Stidham, he'd be playing.
We just don't know. Yeah, they know better than we do. But, I mean, just judging on his production from the limited amount of action he had, I'd be... If I was on the, you know, the... in the office or on the staff, I would consider like seeing what you got in them. See, like give them a quarter, a couple quarters just to see.
Well, at this point, you're not making the playoffs. I mean, you technically could if the Bills slide.
Yeah.
But
that's true. I would be curious to see if they happen to lose a game or two more. They might actually be more willing to do that. But I think Belichick's pride won't let that happen until it's mathematically eliminated.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
So very interesting. Well, I like that we at least had one poll we could cover. Next week, we'll have to try to go through the rest of the rookie polls because I find those the most compelling. The rookie running back poll specifically. Pittsburgh wide receiver polls are pretty cool too, but any final words of wisdom from Izzy the Pharaoh Fantasy?
No, I think I've shared some wisdom today. I hope.
I'm going to sign off the podcast and try to acquire Justin Jefferson and change for my DK Metcalf and or AJ Brown shares. Maybe in both cases, the times I have those, I'm contending. So it'll be interesting to see what I can get. And we'll see if it works out for me. So wish me luck.
Do you have a lot of Justin Jefferson or no?
I have zero Justin Jefferson because I took Ruggs everywhere.
Why wouldn't you diversify?
Because I was only in three leagues where the opportunity aligned with the draft pick. Mm. In all three, I already had. I kind of wanted to go a little bit more. Jefferson, I felt like would have had, and I think we talked about this in an earlier podcast. I think Justin Jefferson was safer to produce right away, but I like Ruggs' ceiling better. And obviously, I was horrifically wrong. I was right that Jefferson broke out earlier, but I never anticipated this type of production. But so in each one of those cases, I was on teams that were kind of like retooling, rebuilding. So I wanted to go ceiling. I didn't need the production as much right away. So and then I just missed.
Yeah, fair enough.
I definitely should have.
Yeah, I actually had Ruggs. It's weird. I like Ruggs a lot, and I still ended up with, I think I ended up with even Ruggs to Jefferson share. I always diversify.
Yeah,
that's
a hard lesson for me to learn this year. I had so many draft picks this year, you know.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we don't know how these players are going to develop in the league.
Yeah.
So look at it this way: I usually try to find a couple guys that I like in similar ranges, and I'll just kind of diversify with them, two or three guys.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot with Swift and Akers, and I don't have any Dobbins, which is probably a mistake. I probably should have diversified with Dobbins as well, but I tried to diversify with Clyde and JT where I could. I think I have three Clydes and one JT. I just traded for I actually traded one of my Clyde shares for a JT.
Wow. I had two Clydes, two JTs.
It was JT and, yeah, so now I have two Clydes, two JTs. It was JT and 2 seconds for Clyde.
Wow.
So
that's right. I remember you talking about that.
Yeah. So I just did that, and I just don't have any Dobbins. I probably should have. Akers look good today.
I have one Akers, one Dobbins, and two Clydes, two JTs. I traded one of my JTs, as you're well aware of, when mm-hmm. Saquon went down. So I got Saquon straight up for JT. I love that.
Yeah, I know. I'm just I'm a big proponent of diversifying. It's
yeah, I'll learn that. Yep.
So,
but cool. Do it yeah, where it makes show. Sense, right? Like, don't diversify just to diversify if you have an opportunity to.
Yeah, well, find a couple guys that you like, two or three guys that you like, even if it's, I have one Rager share. I don't even like Rager. I'm like, well, just in case I'm wrong, I'll take a Rager share.
There you go.
And so far it hasn't paid dividends, but I just don't want to be. You don't want to be left with none.
Yeah.
Of a player. It's just, it sucks.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, and then like this is the perfect case. Like Justin Jefferson, I completely missed, Now I have to, now it's going to cost me a DK or an AJ if I want one, That's steep. That's unfortunate. But you got to, you kind of got to put your pride behind you, give yourself a clean slate. And it's almost like in Dynasty, you have to have short-term memory loss. It's hard. Yeah. It's hard to spend that on Justin Jefferson, knowing that he was taken as a late first. But you gotta just forget it. So forget about it.
For sure.
So good. I like that final words of wisdom. So thank you guys for listening to us this week. Join us again next week. Make sure you check out our main handle on Twitter at FF Dynasty Trades. If you're not on Twitter, make sure you get on there because there's lots of valuable stuff happening. Check us out on the website, dynastytradecalculator.com. Follow Izzy at DTC_IzzyE. You can follow me at FF Hercules. This show is produced by Jonathan Mosier at DTC underscore John Mosier. Thank you for listening this week, you guys. Talk to you later. Bye. Let's go.